Good evening. This is KGVM Bozeman, Montana, 95.9 on your dial. And this is the Meditation to Self-Realization Show. I'm Jim.
And I'm Marion.
And tonight we have kind of a special show. We did the Five Awakenings last week, and the first couple phases of it, three phases. There's still two more to do. We're going to do that next week because in the middle of the Five Awakenings workshop last weekend, Prithiji did a question and answer about the compassion of the divine feminine. And during that, there's a soul sync meditation, and for whatever reason, that did not come through on the recording, and it was recorded live, so there might be a few glitches in there, so bear with it. And at the end, you'll hear people saying goodbye, and if we have enough time, we'll actually do a soul sync, a 12-minute meditation. Were you going to get us started, honey?
Yes, I think we'll do a little breath work together, and we'll access universal intelligence. If possible, you can gently close your eyes. And we're going to seek to become very present. So if we sit tall and with our spine straight, and focus on our breath. Let's take a deep inhale and then gently exhale and make our exhale longer than our inhale. So slow and deep. And let's take three breaths this way. And relax your facial muscles. Feel your shoulders relax. Close your lips and let your breath flow in and out of your nostrils. Continue to breathe consciously and be aware of your chest rising with the inhale and falling slowly with your exhale. If your mind wanders, gently bring it back to your breath. If thoughts come through, just watch them pass like a cloud passing in the sky. And now, as you're taking another breath, feel your heart expand. Maybe even think of loved ones so that you really feel the love in your heart. The abode of the divine or universal intelligence. And let's take one more breath, slow and deep. And if your eyes are closed, you can open them when you're ready. Ready for our time with Prithiji. who's a mystic and philosopher from in India, although she travels the world, sharing wisdom teachings and working towards oneness and raising the consciousness of humankind. So we're going to hear about compassion for divine, the divine feminine. Enjoy. Here she is.
What does the word feminine mean? If we look at a human being as the coming together of Prakriti and Purusha, or the coming together of the masculine and the feminine, every man has these two dimensions and every woman has these two dimensions. The masculine side of us is more logical, analytical, probably decisive and action-driven. The feminine side of us is forgiving, sensitive, intuitive. It has an immense potential to nurture a team or to nurture a vision. Just like how all mothers in nature do. So whether you are a man or a woman, please know that the time, the precious few minutes that we are going to spend together are meant to support every one of you. But I see only women, I think. Just one second. But there are men, so okay. I see two kinds of women around me. Those who are awakened and those who are unawakened. And the unawakened are sleepwalking through life. Why would I say that? Definitely it is not out of disrespect. Even though their eyes are open and they're going about doing their chores, their mental realities are far removed from actuality. Their inner reality is distorted by a mind that is spinning imaginations of fear, of anxiety, and of stress. A mind that is leading them back to memories of sorrow, loneliness, disappointment, or even sweet moments of the past. And they're not in touch with actuality as it is. And they're also not in touch with the greater intelligence or the divinity that pervades the universe. The greater intelligence is what I would call as God consciousness. It is a part of you. It is a part of all existence. And then there are women and also men who are awake. When I say they are awake, they have disentangled themselves from this mind-projected suffering. They have tasted, they have experienced the greater dimension of their consciousness. They have experienced the true human potential, which is equanimity, great peace, great bliss, great oneness. Even with a stranger, one is with the tree, one is with the river, one is with all humanity, with all existence. I want you to know that external problems, whether you are awake or unawake, they will exist. But we're talking about suffering, which is an internal stressful state of being. That is the condition of the unawakened. So when does the divine feminine awaken within you? To help you understand this, I would lead you very briefly on Ekampatha or Ekam's path to enlightenment. The first stage on Ekampatha is to move from being an unconscious human being to becoming a conscious human being. You're conscious of the surroundings, you're conscious of your actions, you're conscious of your words, your gestures, and its impact. When you go higher than that, higher than just being conscious, the second stage of Ekampatha is you become aware of your inner state. That is, you become awake of your thoughts and your emotions. That is, behind your actions and your responses. You are aware. Let us say you're performing an act of generosity. That act of generosity could be either coming from a state of kindness, or it could be coming from a suffering state of guilt. You become aware of the state from which you're performing an act, a state from which you are giving a response. You are aware of yourself, your inner state. The third stage is transformation. And transformation is when your heart flowers. I would say the divine feminine begins to awaken only when you reach the third stage, which is when your heart is transformed. So what does transformation means? Does it merely mean giving up an addiction or a destructive habit? That we can say it is reformation. Transformation is different. It is when your heart flowers, when you are able to non-judgmentally bring attention to the other, to another's feelings, and sense what they're feeling. And you are moved, because your heart has flowered, you are moved to creating a difference in the lives of people around you. Then I would say the divine feminine is awakened within you. But let me complete the fourth and the fifth stage as well. The fourth stage of Ekampatha is awakening. This happens when you have a direct personal experience of an enlightened state of consciousness. That is, when you experience great peace, great compassion, great ecstasy, Maha Shanti, Maha Karuna, or Maha Sammoda. When you have a glimpse of an enlightened state, you are awakened. And the final stage is enlightenment. And in this stage, suffering has ceased in you. When craving and fear has ended, and you are established in an unshakable equanimity and oneness. You probably have been seekers for years. And I would invite every one of you to take this journey to India, to go to a month-long journey to enlightenment. That's it. Let us get back to awakening of the feminine within, which is the third stage, which is transformation. When the divine feminine is awakened within you, you become Shakti. Shakti is the enlivening force. It is the life-giving power. When you awaken to this dimension of the divine feminine, you can enliven an uninspired human being. You can enliven an organization or your family or your team with a mission. You inspire life. You inspire towards a greater vision. you experience incredible power to move things. That is the divine aspect of Shakti. The second aspect of the divine feminine is Amba. Amba is compassionate, motherly, forgiving, nurturing. It is the motherly aspect in you. It is that nature that has been the primary reason for humanity's evolution. When you are awakened in your consciousness, when the divine feminine awakens in you as Amba, then you become a force, an evolutionary force. The third is Kali. When the divine feminine as Kali awakens within you, you wield power to help people shed their ignorance. You become a wise guide. You help people move from darkness towards light. And the fourth and the final aspect of the divine feminine is Parvati, the enchantress. Regardless of your age, regardless of your gender, when the divine feminine awakens within you as Parvati, there is grace that flows into you and out of you. An irresistible grace that draws people to be a part of the good that you're doing to the world. I wish that every one of you awaken to these aspects of the feminine in you. It is important that you go through mystic journeys to free yourself from that which is binding you, to free yourself from the limited consciousness and awaken to these powers that exist in you. As long as you are in a stressful state, as you are living in a suffering state, as you are bound by your past, you are unawake to these feminine powers that is there in you. To all the people of One Heart worldwide, our heartfelt support to your noble vision. And I want to bless that your vision be fulfilled. And I can tell you that your vision will be fulfilled easily when you awaken to your power as a feminine. Let me lead you through a beautiful meditation that is practiced by millions all over the world. It is called the Soul Sync practice. This meditation gives you three outcomes. It moves you into a beautiful state. It moves you into a place of relaxation, calm, and awareness. The second outcome is it can help you manifest your heartfelt intention. The third outcome is it helps you connect to the divine, the universal intelligence as a field of consciousness, opens your heart to an experience of the sacred in your life. Of all the advancements that has happened in our modern day life, Our heart has lost the experience of seeing the sacred in life. Life has become mechanical, it has become logical. It has lost the magic of the sacred. This meditation opens your heart. It leads you into an expanded state of consciousness and allows you to feel the sacred in life. Let me lead you today into the soul sink. There are six stages for this practice. The first three stages leads you into deep relaxation, enhanced health, and also an improved quality of sleep. And the last three stages activate the Brahmagarbha, or the womb of the limitless consciousness, this region is associated with the thalamus in the brain. In this stage, your consciousness moves beyond your limited self towards a progressive expansion. Heartfelt intentions that is held in this expansive state of consciousness, it becomes very powerful, the intention for you to break through the thought barrier and enter into the world of matter. Probably you've read the book Secret. Secret to manifesting intentions is not limited to just positive thinking alone. This actual secret to manifesting intention is it lies in your state. When you feel expanded, and then when you hold an intention that you want to see manifest in your life, then you would see it happen in your life. And this meditation also will help you feel or establish a new personal relationship with the universe. Life itself would rearrange itself in such a way that you experience synchronicities. Life will feel magical. Life takes miraculous turns. Whatever your goal may be, you can use your soul sink, this practice, as your go-to place to create harmony and to experience flow in your life. It just takes about 12 minutes, but it will leave you feeling harmonious your entire day. Are you all ready? Be seated in a comfortable position, either on a chair or on a meditation cushion. I want you to rest your hands on your thighs. Let your palms face upwards. You will be counting your breaths in the soul sink meditation, and you will count your breath with a touch of your thumb and your fingers. You can start with the index finger, then the middle finger, ring finger, and the little finger. And we will repeat it again so that we can reach a count of eight. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So the gentle touch between your thumb and your fingers creates the bodily awareness, or the proprioception. Soul sink will allow you to move into a place of calm and expansion. Just remember to count your breath. It is possible that you get deviated. It is possible that you go, your mind goes wandering, but you get your attention back and continue with your breath. Yes, can you speak now?
Yes. How do we transform, you know, one of the deepest emotions that we all have, which is sadness when we lose someone we love? I mean, it's such a deep emotion that impacts every human being. And I would love to know your thoughts on that.
To lose somebody whom we love is probably, it is a lot of pain. And there is a lot of grief when you lose somebody who's very dear to you. There is a period of grief which your body experiences because of this person not being there in this realm with you. So the body cries. And if you look at every ancient civilization, they have made sure that they give that time of grieving process. They help the person grieve so that this pain of separation is experienced by the body and then it is got out. It is not stored. If that pain is not got out of you, that pain can hurt you, it can hurt your life. So if you look at India, even today, if somebody does pass away in a village, cities are a little different, but if in case there's somebody who dies in a village, the entire village comes together. There are professional people who sing very loud and who cry out very loud so that the entire family of the person or of that person's family is able to get into that process of grieving. Get into the process of grieving so that emotion and that pain that one is struggling because of having lost somebody so important leaves the body. They come together. They are professionals, I think. They're trained to support the entire village in terms when there is a loss of a person in a family. So they come together. A group of 5-6 women, they come together, they hug each other, they hold each other, they scream, they cry out very, very loud. It is called opari. It is a process of allowing that pain to get out of the being of the family. That is, they sing, they think about the dead person, they sing in praise, they get back to those memories, those beautiful memories of what they had experienced with that person, so that the family is able to get into that space of grieving and allow that pain to leave them. Because it is a natural experience of the body. Once the grieving process is over, once that pain has actually left, if you are still suffering, it is important that you bring attention to your state of suffering and to see it very clearly, to observe it, to be aware of it, not try to run away from it, not try to escape from it, but instead bring attention to what your suffering truly is. Bring attention to that sadness. If there is guilt, bring attention to the guilt. Whatever that emotion, the disturbing emotion you are experiencing around that person not being there in your life, bring attention to it. Let me share with you an experience of a young man, a very young, he's in his early 20s, and he was in India for the process, and he was in a space where he was very sad and depressed. He had lost his dad, And then after the process, he shares with the entire group. He said, "I thought I loved my dad so much. I thought I was sad and depressed because he was not there in my life. I believed my depression and sadness was he's not there in my life. But today I see it very differently. As I brought attention to my thinking about my sadness, the thinking is like this. What will happen to my life without you? Who is going to take care of my education? Why did you leave me so quickly and go away? What is going to happen to me? How lonely am I going to be without you?" The entire thinking was revolving around himself. As he began to observe and immerse in the process, that sadness with which he was entangled got out of him. And for the first time in probably over a year, he connected back to his family. He connected with his mother. He connected with the other siblings. He was not there for them because he was engaged in his own suffering. That is why I can't stress enough the importance of life lived free of suffering. Because only then you're truly alive. Only then you can truly connect. And it is possible to be free of suffering. I would like to make a clear distinction again between suffering and a problem. Problem is an external situation. Problem is an uncomfortable external challenge to which you need to find solution, to which you need to act in order to find the solution. But suffering is the inner dialogue that continues within you. And it is possible to live free of suffering.
Arlene, you're muted. You're muted.
I can't see her as well.
If someone were to come to Ikam and we learn to enter into a state of awakening, do we gain the skills to remain there? Because I often think we, as Westerners, we go to retreats or we go to meditation and then, you know, for a few weeks, we're able to maintain that peace and that calmness and compassion, but then we switch back into our normal state of ego consciousness.
Beautiful question, Arlene. See, when you have one experience of enlightenment, it is possible that, you know, your brain is immersed in it for a while, and then when it comes back, and you really do not know how to handle your suffering, the inner disturbance, the inner entanglement that happens with oneself. If you do not have the teaching, the wisdom that supports your state, then it is definitely going to be, definitely even having one experience of awakening is a great experience in itself. But the state does not last. What happens at Ikam, at least the 4-week journey, what happens at Ikam is you will have the wisdom. You will be put into deep meditations. You will immerse yourself in deep processes. You will experience, or you will have many realizations that would lead to insights. You would have many insights that would lead you to experience awakening. That is where you can disentangle yourself from the mind, disentangle yourself from the suffering, where you experience state of being in peace or being in the presence or being in the moment or experiencing bliss. And then you experience living in an enlightened state. So it is just not one experience of enlightenment where you reach a peak or a high and then you fall down immediately. We have created an entire ecosystem for you to be living in that state. We describe enlightenment as, of course, those states of experiencing pure consciousness, experiencing that great bliss, great compassion, great delight. It is a state where you are free of every form of suffering. And you experience such intense awareness that you are able to see the arising of suffering when it comes next time. That is, you have recognized the thief. When you have recognized the thief cannot thieve you. It is not possible. It is built over days. It is built over weeks. When you move into the space of seeing how suffering emerges, and as you see it emerge, you have the wisdom, you have the practice, you have the awareness to see it very clearly that it doesn't grow into a monster. So it is just not experiencing a high. We make a clear distinction between experiencing an enlightened state and living in an enlightened state. Though experiencing an enlightened state itself is an incredible, precious moment of one's life, but you are truly blessed to live in that state of enlightenment, because when suffering does arise, you know it very clearly. You know how it is forming. You know the thought structures. You recognize it very effortlessly because you have seen it. It is an incredible journey. And I would wish that every one of you at some point of time in your life, you do make a trip to India to go through this journey.
I know it's in my cards. Yes. As women, sometimes I think when we come across as strong or powerful men or other people think of us as having masculine energy. So how to hold that divine feminine and still be powerful and kind and compassionate is something that I think we all struggle with. I mean, you embody that, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
When one is full and when one is complete, When the struggle to prove your superiority ceases, that's when you feel complete and you feel full. Then you do not try to become the other. For a large part, I mean, I always say when people talk about feminism, I say, discovering one's true inner power should never be a fight against men. Or to believe that men are stronger or more powerful and to become like them. when you discover your inner power in terms of the impact that you can create, in terms of the connection that you can experience, in terms of actually bringing life to people around you or to things around you, when you can get into that space of feeling full and complete, there is an immense power that you experience. And when you feel that power from within you, that is when you really do not want to become, you need not become the other. You know, it is not necessary. I would never say that a woman is less or a woman is more than man. I would definitely say that we are very different. Both are very different. And both have their powers, both have their capacities, both have their impact that one can create. So if you can discover your power, if you can feel how wonderful you are as a human being, how complete you are, how, as I said, when you know that you can impact, when you know that your true nature is there, which can impact and create greater good, and you feel complete and whole within, that is when you stop comparing with the other. It need not be between men and women also, but it can be in even in comparison with somebody else in life.
I notice working in Nepal and Tibet that often women were delivering by themselves and I had a and risking their lives, you know, to die. They often died in childbirth. But one time I just had this sort of a divine wisdom come into me to talk to men about everyone has a mother and that your wife is the mother of your child. And when you become engaged in saving your wife, you're saving the mother. And that was a really big shift for us with the men in our communities that instead of, you know, not being present, they became more actively engaged. And it was sort of in a way, like you said, shifting that equanimity, that, you know, feeling of compassion and the motherly divine energy and letting the men hold it too. So I'm interested, you know, what your thought is on that.
Definitely, Arlene, a lot of education has to be given to men as well. Even women, for that matter. A woman has to discover her power. A woman has to know that she is incredibly powerful in terms of the change that she can create, or the connection that she can experience, or she has incredible power. She has to know that. And definitely educating a man about a woman's power and her nature, her experience of compassion, her ability to, you know, to truly care for others. A man has to know this about women. Definitely education would help. And I don't know the situation in Nepal and Tibet today. But to know that a woman is strong, a woman is powerful, she can do so many things. She can bring forth such a beautiful life on this planet. She can inspire so many people around her. She can be a mother. She can be a true goddess. That education has to be given to everybody, both men and women.
Oh, Arlene, you're muted again.
think you have to, there. Prodigy, thank you. I'm still just really so blown away how our lives have connected multiple times, and I've had the privilege to get to know you better and really be, and you know, inspired by your divine feminine energy, and just for you to take this time to be with all of us on this call and to share your love and compassion and wisdom. And I do hope and pray that all of us make it to ECOM. I know that it's in my future, and I will meet you there in the field of possibilities. So grateful.
Would love to see you all there. There's one thing I want you to remember. What makes an individual powerful is not whether you are a man or a woman, whether you are holding this position or not. What actually makes you create a positive, powerful impact is whether you are awakened or unawakened. When a woman is awakened, she experiences incredible feminine power. And we are more than half of the human population. And it will be great if we can awaken to that feminine power. Love to see you all in ECOM sometime. Thank you so much, Arlene, for bringing this group together. Love you all. Namaste.
I love you too. Thank you so much. You've made my day.
Namaste. Thank you.
Namaste. Namaste, Preetaji. Namaste, everyone. Thank you, everyone. Bye, guys.
Namaste.
Thank you, Preetaji. Love you.
Love you.
Thank you.